Shannon Osaka, welcome to KABU.
Thanks for having me.
Shannon Osaka is an environmental journalist with the web magazine Grist. She specializes in climate change. She just co-authored what amounts to an important report titled Points of No Return. The authors describe this report as, I quote, addressing climate change, but of a particular kind, climate tipping points, elements of the Earth's system in which small changes in global temperature can kick off reinforcing loops that tip a system into a profoundly different state, accelerating heat waves and permafrost thaw and coastal flooding and fueling more warming. Give us some examples of those Earth systems in which what look like small changes can kick off these major reinforcing loops that would really accelerate global warming.
Yeah, so one of the first ones that I think of is if we think about the Greenland ice sheet, which is just this huge, enormous ice sheet, and that ice sheet has started to melt. And what happens when it starts to melt is you would think, okay, as the temperature goes up, it melts a certain amount with each increase in temperature. That may not actually be the case, because what happens is that as the ice sheet melts, there are these various feedbacks that start to play in that cause it to melt faster and faster. One thing is it melts, and then that reduces the bright white snow that's on top of the ice sheet, and that white snow reflects the sunlight. And when it gets darker, then it absorbs more sunlight, and that causes more melting, which in turn causes less snow, which causes more melting. You can see where it goes from there. Another interesting sort of tipping point and feedback loop is permafrost. So permafrost is this Arctic soil that is basically frozen. Normally, it's frozen all year round, and it holds all of these little microbes and things like that that are not decaying at the normal speed. What happens is as we are heating up the planet, that permafrost is starting to melt. And what that means is that all of these little materials which have been held in there and which include a ton of methane emissions, as they melt, that methane goes into the atmosphere. And methane is an extremely powerful greenhouse gas. It's about 84 times more powerful than carbon dioxide. And having that methane in the atmosphere can then create more warming, which then creates more melting of the permafrost, more melting of the Greenland ice sheet. You can sort of see how things start to spiral a little bit out of control.
Yeah, the melting of the permafrost, my sense is that permafrost is not just microbes and very small bacteria and things, but also the top part of the permafrost right near the surface. In the summer, there are some small plants that thrive there, some flowers. There are insects, sometimes so many insects that human beings can't tolerate them. They all die very soon, and they build up this layer of almost always frozen permafrost. I've read, actually, that it's a huge, huge volume of what becomes carbon dioxide or methane as it decays.
Right.
A huge volume, much more than, the volume in the atmosphere.
Right, exactly. It's enormous. I mean, sort of the good news is that the melting could take place over a very long period of time. But already we're seeing that the area of permafrost has started to lose more carbon than it sucks up. And so that's causing, I think it's about 300 to 600 million tons of carbon released every year. And so that's a really significant addition to the carbon emissions that we are already spewing into the atmosphere all the time.
The same thing, it seems to me, is happening in other areas, bands of plants and animals around the globe as they warm, like the boreal forests or tropical forests. It's a similar process. All of the carbon that's stored in the ground, especially, but in the trees themselves, when the trees die, and the low ground processes get warmer, you get a tremendous release then as it decays of carbon dioxide and methane.
Yeah, in the Amazon rainforest is just this enormous stockpile of carbon, right? I mean, because any living creature, any tree is basically storing tons of carbon in its bark and its tissues. And what's happening is as temperatures go up, as certain areas are getting hotter and drier, that's increasing the dry season, and that's making the rainforest more likely to burn. And what happens is when trees burn, they release that carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. And so the rainforest has for a long time been a carbon sink, meaning it's sucking CO2 out of the atmosphere and storing it in those trees. And over time, we're now seeing it that it could actually become a source of carbon emissions by about 2035, where it's giving off more than it's taking up. And that, again, has very significant impacts on long-term climate change.
You know, one of the things in your report that I found most interesting was the description of the tropical forests and how they, in fact, there's mechanisms that maintain themselves. They're just not sort of growing there. And if you interrupt those mechanisms that they maintain, like transpiration that keeps things both cold and wet over huge areas of land, when you begin undermining those natural processes, destruction of the rainforest, I mean, the death of trees and the death of whole areas of trees, not some ranching and farming, which is also being now accelerated in the rainforest under Brazil's Donald Trump. The whole rainforest ecosystem could, in fact, ultimately collapse. That would be just an enormous disaster for the world and probably wipe out humanity. And it's not inconceivable.
I don't want to go so far as to say that it might wipe out humanity, but it would be quite devastating, especially to the region and to the overall planet. I think the estimate is that if about a quarter of the rainforest is deforested, then that might turn the entire Amazon into essentially a savanna. And the reason that happens is because the trees themselves are creating this moist environment. They're sucking up water through their roots, and then they're transpiring it out through their leaves, and that creates rainfall. It produces sort of a cooling effect. And so the idea is that once you cut down trees, the ecosystem doesn't go back automatically to the way it was before. The trees are really creating this whole environment. And so it can be quite terrifying. One thing, when I was reporting on this story, what I kept thinking about just from a personal level, another part of it is we were looking at, you know, the destruction of coral reefs from ocean acidification. And I just kept thinking, I want to personally see these ecosystems because I don't know that they're going to be around in 10, 15, 20 years.
You know, my dire prediction, most dire prediction, that in fact humanity might in fact be stressed to the breaking point and in fact disappear, is that human beings don't just sit idly by and allow themselves to die and starve to death. What we'll get if global warming takes hold and begins destituting and destroying the environment around the world, especially in the hotter countries, which become uninhabitable, they're not going to sit down and just wait to die. And they have militaries, and some of them have hydrogen bombs and nuclear weapons. We're going to get some kind of a dystopia that Hollywood is so good at showing. What we can expect is nuclear blackmail. The Pakistanis could say, we're going to set off this machine that will bathe the entire planet in deadly neutrons unless you send us some food. And we are not responsible for what's happened to the globe. You are, which is absolutely true. This is Bill Resnick for the Omo Variety Hour on KVOO on 90.7 Portland, Oregon, talking to Shannon Osaka, an environmental journalist with the web magazine Grist. She specializes in climate change, just co-authored a substantial report titled Points of No Return. We just discussed several of those tipping points that threaten to make global warming irreversible. and this threatened to create temperatures that leave the plant virtually uninhabitable for humans. Fortunately, at this time, things are not hopeless. Climate scientists give us 10 years, not a very long time, to greatly reduce greenhouse gas emissions. And the good news is that we know what has to be done. We have the resources and the technologies, off-the-shelf technologies, to do it. For those of you out there in radio land who listen to KBOO and our old mole show, you've heard all about that raft of solutions and discussions of the Green New Deal and its many components. But for those solutions to be realized, we need a different set of tipping points, that is, social and political tipping points, such that the people wake up and demand a mobilization to save the planet. Shannon Osaka, at the conclusion, the end of your report, you briefly discussed signs that those social and political tipping points might well be occurring. Let's conclude with your optimistic ideas about emerging politics.
Sure. I think it's interesting because I think there's that old adage, right, which is that change happens slowly and then all at once. Like, you'll see this sort of microscopic step-by-step change happening over a period of decades, then all of a sudden, boom, everything looks totally different. And in the conclusion to the piece, I talk a little bit about basically in 10 years, there was a huge change in America from going from horses and pedestrians to there being 5 million cars on the road. Now, for climate change, that was ultimately not a very good change, but it shows how fast things can happen. So I think when we think about what we've called here and what a few researchers have called social tipping points, there's a few different things that we're talking about. One side of social tipping points can be technological, like, for example, particular types of energy becoming cheaper than other types of energy. So in most places, we've already started to see this. Solar and wind energy is now cheaper than fossil fuels in many, many markets across the world. And that's a big force behind the lowering of the U.S. carbon emissions over the past 12 years. So that's one thing. That's the technological side. And then there's the social side. And this is much harder to follow and track and understand from a research perspective, because what you see are these general social changes, and they're kind of hard to quantify. But in the past few years, I mean, here in the U.S., we've had the Sunrise Movement, which is a huge youth climate movement. There have been many other youth climate activist groups that are getting out there pushing for the Green New Deal and really changing the conversation. There's been Greta Thunberg in the European Union. She's been making a lot of noise and kind of pushing climate change into the mainstream. And so there's a growing number of things socially that are starting to make people feel like supporting action on climate change is the right moral thing to do. And also fossil fuels are starting to look really immoral. There's the movement to divest university endowments from fossil fuels and all of that kind of thing. So we've seen over the past few years sort of an awakening socially in the U.S. and in other parts of the world. And I think the biggest question for me is, in the aftermath of the coronavirus, of the pandemic, when people are excited to get back out there and live their lives, will that activism continue?
My optimistic assessment is that it surely will. My pessimistic optimism is that COVID is not over and various variants may appear.
Very true.
Which will upset the apple cart of the entire system around the world. The unprecedented viral attack, which we've allowed to happen, thanks especially to the right-wing deniers. But if, in fact, we recover from the pandemic, my sense is that the future holds. And the climate scientists are unmistakably predicting that we are going to see a series of intensifying, damaging, dangerous climate events. You're going to see cities underwater, maybe Long Island underwater. Mar-a-Lago may be floating downstream, varies up into the ocean. these terrible droughts, hurricanes, typhoons, they're already becoming more intense and more intense. And at some point, people are going to wake up. And it could be in the next 5 or 10 years, maybe 15 years. As long as climate change has not become irreversible, there are going to be moments when people are realizing the risks that they and their families and their children and families and their neighbors and everybody around the world, it will be an international awakening. And it's not inconceivable that the good guys will be able to take command of the economy. It would have to be a massive movement that would displace the elite class and be so big that the army didn't want to take them on. But in fact, we could have that wartime mobilization that some are talking about, all resources, every bit of capacity we had to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Anyway, that's my hope. Shannon Osaka, environmental journalist, written a lot on climate change. Look for her report on GRIST, Points of No Return. Thanks a lot for talking to us today.
Thanks so much, Bill, for having me.